Accession number 26852, Reel 4.
Mr. Coop, Reel 4. So, we were talking about your time with the 1st Battalion, North Staffordshire Regiment.
Yes, wonderful time.
At Lazarus Barracks, Trieste.
Lazaretto.
Lazaretto, sorry. I just read my note, sorry. Between September 52 and I think it's June 53.
Something like that.
We've got an idea of what you were doing as a bandsman now, but what sort of happened next then?
Well, two things really I remember particularly. One is having to walk, before we were allowed to join the band, we had to walk the Morgan Line, which was the line that ran across the top of northern Italy and segregated us from White Russia and Yugoslavia, as it was then, Serbia. And the Morgan Line was strictly defended on either side, and nobody could go into the no man's land between them. If you went into the no man's land, you could be shot and left there. We were quite clearly. And we were not allowed out until we could walk the Morgan Line and know where it was and what it was. And it happened by accident. We did eventually go stray over it one day and pass the dead body on the way back, which is quite off-putting. But I also remember coming back through the vineyards and pinching the grapes and thinking how wonderful they were. The fruit was something I'd never eaten, so beautiful fruit, remember it now. The band, we were treated as a band at that time, and we were told that... a particular thing that I do remember about Trieste, I must mention it, was the Army Education Corps. Because I later became an educationist, and I could look at these guys...
Tell me about it. Why did you come in Army Education Corps?
Well, we had to do your Army... you were encouraged to do your Army Education Corps, so they had three certificates of education, because they were keen on producing education.
Which one were you doing? Or were you doing?
I started with the third, the second, I got the first, all the way through my army career. And the first, they told me, was equivalent to the old school certificate. It had something like 8 subjects on it, I think. Something like that, all at one go.
So how did that, tell me what the Army Education Corps did for you. I mean, what form?
Well, they took traditional further education lessons. They were good men. They were good teachers. And they knew about human nature. And they manipulated people. So even old sergeants who didn't want to learn anything could be motivated to read a poem, to recognize something interesting in literature, to be actually, some of them, to read. Because some of these guys went in the army couldn't read. And it's amazing to me that they could take band boys who were almost illiterate, teach them to read and teach them to play an instrument and teach them to think well of themselves. Well, when I came later into schools, the ordinary school kids just couldn't do that to some of the kids.
Well, you mentioned what, I know it's a bit rude, but the example of the poem.
Well,
it's rude, but it gets the point across.
Well, the point was that these guys were real, these teachers were real, and they had a grasp of military psychology. So all these old sergeants who'd been in for ages and warrant officers and above, who were very manly in the virtues and thought poetry was weak and effeminate, when they had to come to do a class and they couldn't miss it, were very upset by this. But the young officer came in, looked at them and said, his first poem was, "Oh cunt, thou dark and hairy gash." The beginning of the first line, and you could feel the room becoming electrified. Is this poetry? Oh my God, this is for us. So it was using, if you want to know, teach John Latin, you got to know Latin and John. That's the motto. And these guys knew John and were starting to motivate him to appreciate what the subject matter was. Clever men knew their job. We don't have an Army Education Corps anymore. What a shame.
And they opened your eyes, did they as well?
Oh, yes, because particularly not just in academic subjects, which I was actually very good at because of my background had been sufficient, untested, but politics, because there is no Army Bureau of Current Affairs anymore. And it's very difficult to produce an Army Bureau of Current Affairs which wasn't biased. But these guys did. They were neutral. They were directed our attention to news bulletins, newspapers, opinions, helped us to assess opinions, think in terms of values, know what we were fighting for, if you like. Very impressed with the Army Education Corps.
Were you aware, I mean, they were supposed to have had a left-wing bias.
I was not aware of that. I wasn't. In fact, I thought they had been very neutral and were very careful not to have a left-wing bias. Mind you, if they had had a left-wing bias, I would have thought they were probably right-minded too.
Anything else you were doing while you were in Trieste?
Well, I remember going down to one of these educational sessions, and on the way back, the town had changed. You went through Trieste itself, through small Muggia village outside it, and then back to Lazaretto along the coast. But there was unrest amongst the civilian population. And as we went through Muggia, the streets are very narrow. And red flags were hanging from the windows, from almost the upper stories to the ground floor. And in the middle of each of these red flags was a black strip. Well, we didn't know that Stalin had died. And these were people in mourning for Stalin, the communist. And the two young bloody idiots that were our senior officers and NCO that day were reaching out of the truck we were driving through, pulling these flags down. Because they thought it was funny. When you saw the buzz of the civilians forming at the bottom of the street behind us, we realized we were in quite a dangerous situation, and we had to get out quick, but that was the beginning of the Trieste riots. I think the following week I'd gone home on rest and recuperation, or whatever you have, call it.
What do you remember of the riots?
We went back home on leave.
So I missed
the actual riots, but what I did was I read about it in the paper, but I could remember those flags being pulled off and the crowds gathering.
And I mean, are you saying that these officers directly provoked the riots?
Yes, I think I am saying that. They certainly started one of the causes for it.
Now, what was the rest and recuperation leave? That's when you came back on leave.
We just came back. Well, we were told that the regiment was going to Korea. We were told that because we were banned, we wouldn't be going, because the band wouldn't be of any use out there. So we were asked to stay behind over the Christmas period as rear guard. So all the instruments were put away, and out came the bandooks instead. And we spent our Christmas at Lazaretto camp as the rear guard.
So this is prior to the riots?
This is after the riots.
Well, you'd gone home?
Yes.
And you came back, and then
The riots took place when I was away. Yeah.
And then you came back, and the regiment left?
To go on leave themselves, and we became rear guard while they went on holiday.
Now, what did that entail?
Rear guard meant doing military duties on the patrolling the boundaries of the camp, guarding the transport pool, doing guard duties at the gate, so you'd turn out and present arms when officers turned up no matter what time of the night it was. Things like that, the usual military. Then, of course, the regiment came back. And what happened? Who was first out to Korea? The band. They sent us out.
The battalion didn't go?
No, they came after.
Now, one thing I want to get through. In the older days, they used to train the band as stretcher bearers.
No, we didn't do it.
You did?
No.
Was it ever intended that that be your role?
No, not at all. I don't know what they did on paper, but the suggestion was that we were actually riflemen who played an instrument.
Now, what had happened? Because you were meant to be not going at all, and now you're...
And then we went, yeah, so we went.
Where did you go when you left?
When we left England.
Well, no, you're in Italy.
After that, we went home to England. again, going back by the... Oh, on the way back from Hooker Holland, the bloody ship we were in burst its boilers. We were adrift in the North Sea for a while. I had to be towed in. Which is funny.
And then what were we doing in England?
After leave, we went to a Litchfield barracks where we assembled to go to Southampton, where we boarded the HMS Asturias troop ship.
Why did they change their mind? Do you know? Or
can't answer, don't know.
What do you remember about... So you were on the Asturias?
Yes.
What do you remember of the trip out on the Asturias?
Well, I remember, first of all, waking up in the docks at Southampton and the cabin that we'd been given. We were given very nice cabins in that boat. And the dock next to us was a ship which towered over us. I mean, we were an enormous 40,000-ton vessel. But it was one of the Queen's, which was absolutely enormous. Travelling on the boat was quite nice because we weren't subject to the normal military drills. We had to keep our rooms clean and tidy.
What were conditions like?
Very good.
Are we talking mess decks here with lots of people in
there? No, we're talking about cabins. With three or four to a cabin. It was a really good holiday.
What about the food?
Food was superb. Excellent. Couldn't have asked for better.
Were you seasick at all?
No, I wasn't. I expected to be, but I wasn't. We played, of course, for the small concerts that entertained the rest of the troops that were on there. And it was a very nice experience. I'd never seen flying fish before, or porpoise, or been followed by sharks. But occasionally rifle drill was done on the after deck, so you had targets to fire at. It was drifting behind the vessel. But we didn't do much of that.
It took a fair while to get out there. Which route did you go up?
We went through Mediterranean, and it's Port Suez is the first one, isn't it? Or is it the Lesseps? I can never remember. But the first port. I had a lovely experience because there we are on an enormous troop ship with an enormous number of people on it from different backgrounds and regiments. And I'm standing at one of the rails watching this boat come out towards... Well, we were parked on double yellow waves, you know. And this boat coming out towards us with a Union Jack at the back and these very important officers aboard. And standing at the jack, the little RAF man, standing to attention. How he did it, I'm buggered if I know, because the boat was rolling from side to side and pitching and tossing. But they parked beside our lot and got anchored up, and when they had disappeared, the young RAF man came aboard and said, "Anybody here know Bansman Coop?" And it was my cousin Michael, who knew we were coming out on that boat. And he said, "Well, if I found a ship that was going out to visit you, all I had to do was to stand attention and nobody would ask." And he craned his way out, and we had a lovely time. That was quite interesting.
Where from then?
From there through the canal, through Timsa, to what's the port on the other side? Which I'm sorry.
It's Port Said and Port Suez.
Yeah, but then having gone through the canal, there's another port on the left, which was a British colony at one time, which was been in revolt.
Aden.
We went to Aden for a while. Stopped off there. Terrible water, I remember. Horrible stuff they put on water.
How are you coping with the climate? Because it gets hot.
No bother at all. I would have expected at that time to have caused me a lot of trouble. It caused me trouble later in Korea. But that's different.
Did you go ashore in Aden?
Yes, I did. And we were followed by all these boys and trying to pinch our money and don't go up the back streets because there's all sorts of problems. It was my first encounter was with Arabs.
What did you think of them?
Noisy. Later, I had a teacher who was a Tiwala, an Arab, and a philosopher that I remember. I got to understand that they. I got to understand how all my life, in some way or other, I've been thinking in stereotypes. and to learn the reality that these people were real people was a big lesson that the army taught.
And where from, Aden?
What we now call Sri Lanka, in those days we called Colombo, and we
Ceylon,
yeah. And again, we went off. The first time I seen bullocks just wandering around the streets, and the sacred cows, and all the sort of things you expect in Hollywood films, like cobras being charmed by snake charmers. Went into my first encounter with a Hindu temple. I hadn't realized you've got to take the boots off. And found that Ganesh and the other carvings in there were difficult to understand. I hadn't grasped the idea that these were metaphors telling you stories. I had to learn that later on. But the extraordinary elaborate carving on these temples was something I shall never forget. First time I met a Theravada Buddhist, began to understand. We were only there for a short period. And then from there, a few weeks later, we ended up in Singapore, which was a total different kind of thing, much more European, much more colonial, if you like. With, again, the separation of the classes, you know. I hadn't realized that words like, don't you know, separated people out. The next time I met that kind of thing was when I ended up at college years later, and somebody said, do you want a cup of tea? And I said, yes. And they said, are you pre-lactual or post-lactual? Do you want the milk in first? It was that sort of division by class, which is something I grew to hate.
What else did you think of Singapore? I mean,
well, I didn't like its food because I got dysentery. I wasn't too happy with the place.
Did you get it proper?
I got it proper. I was in the ship's hospital for a short period.
Oh, that bad?
Yes, it knocked me out, and so I had a view about the cleanliness, which it wasn't too keen for.
Did they treat you dysentery, or just wait until you got better on the ship?
They just waited until I got better. Well, I was pretty robust, so I did overcome that very quickly. And the next encounter with the next was landfall was Pusan. And Pusan, you could smell 4 or 5 miles offshore.
Could you really? I mean, I'm not.
If the wind was in that direction, you couldn't believe it.
What kind of a smell? Smells are difficult to describe verbally, but what?
Shit. Human excreta. And of course it was the paddy fields. And it was quite extraordinary. When we actually...
What do you mean it was the paddy fields?
Well, they used the excreta to enrich the earth.
So when you got closer, what did you think then?
Appalling. But the thing that was most appalling to us to land in Pusan for the first time was having moved away from the docks and into the railway stations, we encountered the children for the first time. And this is where I saw big men cry and saw Americans who were, when they're moved, the most generous people on earth, giving away everything they had because these children were mutilated. Appalling, emaciated, little homunculus who weren't going to live very long. They'd been starved, they'd been beaten, they'd limbs torn off, and they were begging. And it made you weep. What is very strange is some weeks ago, recently, I have been to a party and met two people from Korea who live in Pusan, and they didn't know what we'd seen. They were elegant, well-educated people who hadn't got a clue of what had happened at the time that we were there. Strange thing time, isn't it?
What sort of a reception did the locals that you saw give you? I mean,
Not very much. We didn't have much contact with them.
Did you see the Americans when you landed?
Yes. They were on the same station as us, but they were going different ways. With part, yeah.
So what happened? What was your first move?
To a transit camp. Not far from where we landed. But we went there in the
dark.
No, I can't remember it. Probably had a field number.
What was it like?
Horrible. Primitive. We arrived in the dark, and I mean dark. There was no light in the tents at all. We were shown into each sort of siphoned off into a tent. Had to feel our way around. If we were lucky, we had a lighter to find a way in. And we could find truckle beds and things like that, which were in terrible condition. And it was very, very cold. And we were told there was a drum, which turned out to be a petrol drum, actually, in the middle of the room. If we wanted water, we could get it from that with a scoop. Well, I got some. And I just recovered from the dysentery, and I really hit bottom. I thought I was going to die. It wasn't until the morning we realized that the water in that drum was rusty. It was pure yellow rust. And I was ill for a very long time.
With dysentery again?
Yeah. And there was no medical centre there. So we were left to look after ourselves for a period of time. I was very lucky, I think, to live through that.
I mean, were you well enough to get to the latrines? Or
no. I had to go and pretty well live there, if you could find where the latrines were. Mind you, I dug more piss holes in the end than anybody else would do. Yeah.
Could you eat?
No, I couldn't eat the thing.
Did you know you had to drink enough water to keep yourself rehydrated?
No, but my body told me that I had to, and I found sources of it which were clean, and my friends were very well. This is where your friends came in. I was a right mess for some considerable time.
And who was there? Was the whole battalion in this transit camp?
I can't remember, but certainly all the band was there. And I remember going, when I was better, and we were going by convoy up to the front line.
Truck convoy.
Truck convoy. We were the last truck. And incidentally, I'd taken my violin with me, and by that time, the news had probably reached North Korea, and it was too much for them, so they signed an armistice. Well, that's my story, anyway.
What was the journey by lorry like before?
Well, to start with, it was done in the dark, and you didn't have much lights on, because you weren't allowed to. We were the last. The lads that I was with was the last lorry in the convoy. And the sergeant wanted a crap, so we had to stop. And whilst he was having his crap, somebody took a shot at us. I'd never seen anybody move across the skyline so quickly as that guy in the crouch position. And all we had was a violin, a double bass, a trombone, and a Sten gun with no ammunition. So we were quickly back in that lorry and moving fast out of the way.
So it was a sort of sniper fire.
Yeah. Somebody behind the lines are having a go. Although everything had stopped, there was still northern men who had infiltrated. And you'd still find occasional stories of guardsmen having their throats cut and things like that. It was cold. It was very cold. Somebody had looked at a map in the War Office and said, "Oh my God, look, it's Korea. Korea is very near Japan. Japan is hot. Summer kit, boys." And it was not.
So you were in tropical kit?
We were actually in ordinary European kit, but it was not sufficient for the conditions we had to face. We were very quickly issued with suitable uniforms when we got to the front line.
How bad was it while you were before? I mean,
rough. It was very rough. When we got up in the first morning, I'm in the tent up there, nobody had warned us that it was Arctic conditions. We just hadn't got a clue. And you can imagine the first trumpeter that takes his instrument out to do his morning practice puts his mouthpiece to his lips and can't get it off because it's burnt into his lips. And two of these trumpeters had to be flown back to Japan for treatment. Nobody told us. What we found out later on was the tents that we were living in were summer tents with a winter fire.
were you able to keep warm? I mean, could you get warm in the tent?
Eventually, when we got the fires going properly and our correct equipment, we were okay.
Now, where had you gone to in this convoy? You'd gone to a...
Well, it's very difficult to say. We actually ended up... Pardon?
Was it a sort of camp? Or
we went to Gloucester Valley, below the mountain called Camarxan, where the Gloucesters had earned the citation, and the American Marines had retreated the mountain, and there was two passes down, and a road which ran back to the behind the lines, and over here was the River Injun. And that line was a line of mountains which led up to the front line.
What was the terrain like? I mean, you've described some of it, but I mean, was it mountainous?
It was mountainous, and it was moorland, barren. And it was unfriendly.
So it wasn't covered in trees?
No. There was no forest. Never saw any.
Now, were you in trenches or were you in a camp?
We were in a camp. There were trenches further away from us, which we eventually viewed later on. But we were in a camp. We were camped in Gloucester Valley. There was a stream that ran through the middle of it. We were considered to be a bad influence on the regiment, so we were camped on one side, the regiment was on the other.
And what was the camp like? Can you sort of describe how it looks? You know?
The typical military camp laid out in military manners with square roadways running through it. And parts which were obviously administrative parts and parts which were obviously fuel and quarters. And there was the band on the other side. Who are now becoming individualistic.
All 40 of you?
More than that by that time. There's a lot more. And we were camped in a circle.